1911, when the British made the fatal, fatal decision in the Privy Council, which nobody knows about today, but which is really the basis of the conflict in Zimbabwe. 1911, the British passed the Privy Council Act, giving the whites the right to divide the country up if they paid some money, so they owned most of the fertile, etc., etc., etc. So at every decade, Zimbabwe has been on the front line. And I really think that with the process we've entered now, because everybody feels they have a right to have an opinion to tell Zimbabweans what to do, it's really important to come to an academic institution such as this one, hang a paper there, and get the debate to be really scrutinized by the tools that are there today. It's really the pressure that I feel from the international community that made me write to Dr. Clark and say, may we present? Because maybe the questions that Africans have put to the West, which lead to these unresolved conflicts between us, need to at one time be really put up there so people start answering them. So I'm going to read a paper, and then I would like questions that are really free for all. Towards a comprehensive national healing program for Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe's planned process for dealing with the past and present human rights abuses. Introduction. The process of Zimbabwe arriving at a point of national healing, reconciliation and integration is a long and arduous one. It is as much a political process as it is a nation-building one. Political intolerance and hatred have filtered into other areas, causing violent conflict over a period of generations. This is lost when people talk about the process in Zimbabwe today, that the violence in Zimbabwe is not a new thing in the past 10 years. That's the life of Zimbabwe, generational inter-violence and all that. It's been there for generations. Over a period of generations, which has led to extensive harm to individuals, families, and damaging of Zimbabwean society. This is a personal opinion now. Zimbabwe as a country is badly damaged, but it is not destroyed. The formation of the inclusive government has resulted in great public expectation for steps to be taken to repair the harm done to the country by planned development, by all. To survivors, to achieve justice for survivors, and to perpetrators through properly designed strategies to become normal members of society again, thereby that we secure social stability in our country. Through the organ, ours is an organ, it's not a ministry. Through creation of the organ on national healing, reconciliation and integration in the inclusive government, Zimbabwe hopes to achieve two clear objectives. The first one, to create a just, peaceful, secure, safe, stable and prosperous society where individuals, regardless of race, regardless of sex, regardless of their political affiliation, are free to live safe, secure, normal, productive, and prosperous lives without fear of attacks, violence, intimidation, kidnappings, and disappearances, unjustified arrests and discrimination, and in which fundamental human rights of all Zimbabweans are fully respected. The second is to establish a culture of zero tolerance for political violence, organized violence, any form of violence, however it manifests itself, whenever it manifests itself, intolerance, discrimination, and to ensure that survivors, their families, and communities are protected against further victimization, and that the law enforcement agencies fulfill their obligations to protect all Zimbabweans against political violence or any form of violence in the future. This, therefore, means that the terminology used in Zimbabwe around issues of transitional justice has had to change. The term survivors is now the preferred term to describe persons who have suffered injury so as to avoid portraying these persons who've been tortured, who have suffered personally, to avoid portraying them to be helpless victims rather than persons trying to cope with the aftermath of their torture and trauma. The goal of punishing the offender has to be established against that of restoration and reformation of the society as a whole. Reparations and once-off compensation payouts must go hand in hand with measures to introduce a new culture of readily available, affordable, and accessible psychosocial support to all Zimbabweans who need it, and in particular, to survivors of torture and egregious human rights violations of the past and present. There is need of another new culture in Zimbabwe, that of human rights training for all Zimbabweans, and in particular of the security forces and non-state actors, sections which have been used to perpetrate violence by successive state formations since 1890. Of equal importance is the need for a program in Zimbabwe to help the public to interrogate the roles and responsibilities of national security forces to achieve a never again syndrome to state-sponsored violence and organized violence in Zimbabwe. The collective goal, therefore, is of long-term healing for the nation, as opposed to merely obtaining a form of transitional justice. The damage done and injuries suffered in Zimbabwe arise not only from state-sponsored violence and organized violence, but from economic crimes ranging from bad quasi-fiscal policies, corruption, and misgovernance. People have been killed or maimed for supporting a particular political party through the generations. Other killings have been around diamonds and gold. Many people have been internally displaced by the electoral process and violence. Operation Mrambatrina and economic instability, these are all the things that have come in to destabilize economic rights of people. The range of human rights violations include the genocide in Matabeleland, Kukurahundi, and other crimes against humanity, rape, torture, enforced disappearance, extrajudicial killings, arbitrary arrests. Children have been used in conflict as youth militia, and women in particular in the liberation struggle, and before that, and today, have been made into sex slaves. These conditions have led to forced immigration of millions of Zimbabweans, most of who live in worse condition in those countries they've gone to than the country, their homes and from their beloved country. Zimbabwe has made the decision to embark on a process that carefully considers all these issues and allows the Zimbabwean people to design for themselves the mechanisms they want to apply to achieve healing, reconciliation, and integration. The mechanisms themselves and the processes of arriving at those mechanisms must effectively deal with the structural, political, social, economic factors that give rise to recurrent political violence and violence in any form. Background. Zimbabwe represents an interesting case study. The colonial state from the beginning was established with a strong underlying philosophy and strong mechanisms put in place for state-sponsored violence as the basis of keeping the peace for the new ruling elite, who set these instruments up to ensure maximum extraction of raw materials in the new country using local labor. These instruments of state-sponsored violence and oppression have been used by successive governments in Zimbabwe, including the Mugabe government. Successive ruling elites have come in to use the same tools of violence to stay in power. In 1980, when the Mugabe government took power, Prime Minister Mugabe announced a statement of intent. It was a statement of reconciliation. This statement of reconciliation by R.G. Mugabe in 1980 is now ignored by the West. The GPA, I should say, when he made this statement, which was not a policy, which was not anything, he became a hero of the international community. This is also forgotten, that he forgave all the colonial crimes in their diversity and depth. Nobody remembers that. The GPA took the statement of Robert Mugabe in the context that he had declared a statement of intent for reconciliation between the Africans and the Europeans, or people who were the locals and people who were Zimbabweans but had come from wherever. This statement of reconciliation by R.G. Mugabe in 1980 is now ignored, I'm saying that. The GPA took this statement in context, therefore, that when we review how Zimbabwe is moving in its endeavor to end the practice of state-sponsored violence and organized violence, we are taking into account what has happened during Zimbabwe's entire history. The 2 decades of violent conflict during Zimbabwe's liberation struggle in the 1960s and 70s were replaced by 3 decades of low-level guerrilla conflict during the period of 1983 to 2009. As the government, using the traditional tools of oppression and violence, state-sponsored violence, they were using that, as the new government to quell perceived threats to their existence. The term low-level guerrilla conflict or low-level intensity conflict is appropriate as it describes the use of security forces acting alone or in concert with non-state actors being applied selectively to enforce compliance with the policies or objectives of a political party controlling the security force. UDI from Britain by Rhodesia in 1965, with Ian Smith's election slogan for a whiter, brighter Rhodesia, vote Rhodesia, France. This is in the middle of Africa. Finally, UDI led to nationwide open conflict in 1972. The liberation forces led by the Zimbabwe African National Union and the Zimbabwe African People's Union fought a bloody war against the Rhodesia, France. The battle cry of ZANLA was, liberation is not ours unless we fight for it. We are our own liberators. I think that if people remember the intensity of the liberation struggle and remember some of these slogans, again, it is important for them to realize that that same intensity in Zimbabwean society remains and is the pool where the energy for going forward will come from. Because Zimbabweans know that they can't cry to anybody. They have to do it themselves. As the fighting intensified, the death toll rose until a negotiated settlement was reached at Lancaster House on December 1, 1979, which ended the civil war. Robert Mugabe and ZANU emerged as the victor in 1980, although this is being contested from information coming. Now it sounds like it was a British thing, but I mean, academics will tell us the veracity of that. As far as we know, Mugabe won the elections. In 1983, the emergence of anti-government violence by a guerrilla band, again, this is something we are being told, of ex-Zipra fighters in Matabeleland and ZAPU stronghold resulted in ZANU engaging massively around the country, not just in Matabeleland. Disproportionate retaliation against civilians and ZAPU supporters around the country that may well have resulted in over 20,000 deaths and only ended when Joshua Nkomo and ZAPU agreed to unify ZANU in the Unity Agreement of 1988. The violence at that time is known as Gukurahundi, a Shona term which means the early rains which washes away the chaff before the spring. Support from the West for Gukurahundi prolonged that era of terrible suffering. Again, we want veracity from academics about what really happened at that time. the political and socio-economic unrest in the 1990s between the government and civil society forced civil society to give birth to the Movement for Democratic Change. The Movement for Democratic Change was established by 42 NGOs. I came from the Association of Women's Clubs, which was started in 1938 by an 18-year-old Zimbabwean African woman, a school teacher. At Independence, we were invited by the grassroots women to actually get that organization to meet their needs. And I actually joined the Association of Women's Clubs in 1981 and became the treasurer then up to 1986 when I became the elected chair and was forced to retire from that. When I got into MDC, because the 42 NGOs agreed that anybody who went into politics had to give up their civil society post. So painfully, I gave up my post in 1999. And the NGO is now watching very closely about the women's position in decision making and pushing from outside the MDC to actually deliver the 50-50 quota, which is an AU, UN requirement, SADC. We have very, very low level achievement of that. So I came from the Association of Women's Clubs into the MDC, and I was the only woman in a group of 10 representing women, and from day one pushing that we should have another 8 women so that there were 9 men and 9 women to have the quota, then failed dismally, and still fighting that front. The political and socioeconomic unrest in the 1990s between the government and civil society forced civil society to give birth to the Movement for Democratic Change on September 11, 1999, which was the day of the thing in America. So, it was late, but I'm saying 2 years later, we met the heads of state in Harare. MDC is the first political party to have successfully challenged ZANU's majority in parliament in the elections of March 29, 2008. However, the period before and after this momentous occasion has been marked by political violence, retaliation and retribution, intimidation of the electorate, farm invasions, displacements and murders. The most notable is the government-led Operation Mrambachina in 2005, Operation Cleanup, in which 700,000 people were reported to have been directly affected and displaced from their homes. The farm invasions, which started in 2000, have also led to a widespread displacement of not only farmers, but farm workers, who number, we are told, up to 1 million. The cholera outbreak late last year, attributed to government's policy to privatize water and exacerbate the economic crisis, that resulted in 6,000 deaths. The effect of the political violence and poor government economic policies has led to a humanitarian crisis that has been felt by the SADC region. An estimated 3 million people have fled to South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, and other countries such as the United Kingdom, Europe, Australia, and some Asian countries. Although these people are classified as economic refugees, it is accepted that a number of them are fleeing from political violence. The GPA signed by the 3 political parties on September 15, 2008, following the widely denounced June runoff election result, is the outcome of a prolonged mediation process whose results are flawed and difficult to work with and to work through. However, in Zimbabwe's political and socio-economic crisis, this GPA remained the only non-violent alternative for the country to move forward and to curtail the suffering, setting up a framework and guiding principles for a national process. The GPA is essentially the third unity or peace accord that the country has signed. All 3 agreements have been flawed. The structural defects in the Lancaster House Agreement of 1979 have had lasting effects. The Lancaster Agreement failed to address racial and ethnic divisions or inequalities. Those inequalities have been at both the economic and political levels. Before and after independence, the white people held the major share of the country's economic wealth, while the people of Western Zimbabwe, the Ndebeles, and other minorities were, no, this is now in independence. In independence, the people from now the center in Mashonaland excluded the people from the West and other minorities, largely on political grounds, from a fair distribution of the country's resources, development, and decision-making. The Unity Accord of 1988 did little to rectify these problems. Both the 1979 and 1998 agreements had another obvious fault, the failure to acknowledge the human rights violations committed in past conflicts and designing processes for dealing with those violations of the past or the welfare of the survivors of those violations. And there was no program to deal with perpetrators. While the GPA has its faults, out of the three agreements, it is the only one that makes an attempt to address the issue of pre- and post-independence state-sponsored violence and organized violence, otherwise said to be political violence. Firstly, the GPA espouses the values of national healing, the values of equity, unity, tolerance, and respect are the guideline principles for the process of achieving Zimbabwe's national healing. Secondly, although it does not lay down a process, the GPA is not prescriptive, and this leaves room for the Zimbabwean people to dictate and design their own process. Thirdly, it provides for the setting up of a national body or framework responsible for advising on the process that will lead to a program of national healing, reconciliation, and integration. This is significant progress given the history of Zimbabwe. Article 7 of the GPA provides that the parties hereby agree that the new government will ensure equal treatment of all, regardless of gender, race, ethnicity, place of origin, and will work towards equal access to development for all. B, will ensure equal and fair development of all regions of the country, and in particular, to correct historical imbalances in the development of the region. C, shall give consideration to the setting up of a mechanism to properly advise on what measures might be necessary and practicable to achieve national healing, cohesion, and unity in respect of survivors, stroke victims of pre- and post-independence political conflicts. D, will strive to create an environment of tolerance and respect among Zimbabweans, and that all citizens are treated with dignity and decency, irrespective of age, gender, race, ethnicity, place of origin, or political affiliation. The GPA does not provide for economic crimes by specifically stating that national healing is targeted at survivors of political conflict. It excludes the element of economic crimes. Zimbabweans will have to interrogate and agree on the parameters of a national healing program and whether it should be holistic as opposed to being merely comprehensive. This will need to be weighed against what will be reasonably possible to achieve. The GPA also then goes further in Article 13 to call for a level of security sector reform. Article 13 states that, in 13.1, state organs and institutions do not belong to any political party and should be impartial in the discharge of their duties. 13.2, for purposes of ensuring that all state organs and institutions perform their duties ethically and professionally in conformity with the principles and requirements of a multi-party democratic system in which all parties are treated equally, there be inclusion in the training curriculum of members of the uniformed forces of the subjects of human rights, international humanitarian law, and statute law, so that there is greater understanding and full appreciation of their roles and duties in a multi-party democratic system. B, that all organs and institutions observe the principles of the rule of law and remain non-partisan and impartial. D, recruitment policies and practices be conducted in a manner that ensures that no political or other form of favoritism is practiced. The responsibility of implementing these provisions are not expressly given to the organ on national healing, reconciliation, and integration. However, The process for national healing will be difficult to accomplish without some measure of security sector reforms. Lastly, Article 18 provides for security of persons and prevention of violence. Article 18 provides in part 18.5 that parties hereby agree to promote the values and practices of tolerance, respect, non-violence, and dialogue as a means of resolving political differences. B, to renounce and desist from the promotion and use of violence under whatever name called as a means of attaining political ends. That the government shall apply, this is C, the government shall apply the laws of the country fully and impartially in bringing all perpetrators of politically motivated violence to book. This is in the GPA. That all political parties, other organizations and their leaders shall commit themselves to do everything to stop and prevent all forms of political violence, including non-state actors, and shall consistently appeal to their members to desist from violence. To take all measures necessary to ensure that the structures and institutions they control are not engaged in the perpetration of violence. The GPA has therefore been fairly progressive in setting up a framework and guiding principles for which a wider-ranging process of national healing can be undertaken in Zimbabwe. Achievements to date of the organ. The inclusive government commenced on in February 19, 2009 by the inauguration of Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai as head of government. Almost immediately following the three principals announced the setting up of the organ for national healing in line with Article 7.1c of the GPA. This organ is, each of the ministers is in their principal's office. So I'm Minister of State in Morgan Tsvangirai is the Prime Minister's office. Minister John Komo is in the President's office, and Minister Gibson Sibanda is in the Deputy Prime Minister's office. But the organ itself, in its formative stages, is in the President's office. This organ is headed by three ministers from each of the political factions. Notwithstanding this level of political intervention, it is understood that the exact character, scope, and parameters of a process of national healing, integration, reconciliation must come out of wide consultations and public participation in order for it to be credible and legitimate. And our slogan really is the process of consultation has to be all inclusive, it has to be grassroots based, and it has to be the Zimbabwean people at home and in the diaspora who must create the mechanisms by telling us how they want this done. So our job in the first 4 months has been to come up with the methodology of how that will be done. Whereas other countries such as Uganda and Rwanda have defined transitional justice processes that promote reconciliation through truth-telling on the part of the perpetrators and forgiveness by the survivor, it is premature to talk about forgiveness in Zimbabwe at the present moment. A number of perpetrators of violence are people in positions of authority at the village level all the way up to national government. Some have not been exposed, and many of them have continued to hold their positions with seemingly no sanctions being applied to them. True reconciliation that leads to forgiveness can only be achieved after full disclosure, and full disclosure must be grounded in a more comprehensive policy around how perpetrators of political violence should be dealt with. Article 18.5C of the GPA robustly states that the government shall apply the laws of the country fully and impartially in bringing all perpetrators of politically motivated violence to book. However, this statement, like the statement in 1980 on reconciliation, this statement provides no incentive whatsoever for perpetrators to make full disclosure and treats all perpetrators the same. Those that have not committed gross human rights violations should be placed in a different category and the applicability of paying reparations considered. It is also that on the ground, the political message of reconciliation may not yet be fully accepted by all elements. There is still some level of political violence occurring sporadically in the country, although statistics are beginning to level off. The issue of amnesty is an area which the political parties in Zimbabwe have not yet articulated. Similarly, the question of prosecutions of perpetrators who are senior ranking government officials has not been debated. These political questions are partially answered under international law and the Rome Statute, but they also require a comprehensive national policy arrived at through public debate and discussion. Notwithstanding, Zimbabwe is a country that is landlocked. And while a lot of Zimbabweans have received Western education, it's one of those countries where families, African families, are still very deeply rooted in traditional practice. So the organ very quickly realized that we needed to actually review how to use the traditional methods of resolving conflict. In Mashonaland, it's called Kushutisana Fodla. You will get this paper so you will see it in the Shona culture. And in Ndebele, it's called Ukukhumisana Umlotha. These are processes which, again, because African people, through the colonial process, were made to be ashamed of their culture, don't talk about. But these are practices that are in place at the grassroots level where people have never broken from using these to resolve conflict, which is why for people asking, how is Zimbabwe keep going? Zimbabweans live in different at different levels in the same society. And Kusutisana Fodla and Ukukhumisana Umlotha is something that we've decided to put up front and allow people who want to use that process to use it unashamedly. It has got six stages. It embodies justice for the perpetrator. It embodies also a never again syndrome for the perpetrator, because the two people, the perpetrator and the survivor, are forced to actually, through their families, have a mediator. They are forced to actually come out truthfully to state what happened. And when the mediator over time is satisfied that really everything has been said and the two are now in agreement about what happened, the families come together, a pledge is taken out by the perpetrator, and this pledge is not a small thing. It's a small thing, but it's not a small thing to the perpetrator, because when I mention what it is, some people might say, but that's not enough. But in peasant cultures, the taking out of a cow to say, this is my pledge, I'm sorry, is a big thing. Or chickens, that's a pledge, I'm sorry, it's a big thing. But that's how the conflict is resolved. In Mashonaland, the families then snuff tobacco from the mediator's hand, and in Matabeleland, they lick ashes from a newly made fire. And that is a sign that this will never be done again. Whoever goes back and does the same thing in of the two partners who are arguing and fighting, who's been wronged and who has wronged, if one of those goes back and starts the quarrel again, the two families then really see that this person is the one who needs help. In all societies, that pledge was enough to create a relationship between the families where if someone's house has been destroyed, the community would then come and help that person to build the house after the two families had an understanding that everything was out on the table. Now, what's interesting for us, as everybody argues, these processes have already begun in a number of village communities, such as Buhera, where our Prime Minister comes from, Gutu, and other areas. The process and dialogue is taking place between and among families, perpetrators of human rights abuses and survivors. Where cattle were taken or property destroyed, reparations are in the process of actually being through this Kushutisana Fodla and Ukukhumisana Umlotha, they are being addressed. However, because we are a country coming out of conflict, and any country coming out of conflict has what our Prime Minister is a very good term for residual elements. There are residual elements, which like in Buhera, after 15 families went through the process with their traditional chiefs and got their cattle back, their chickens back, started to build the houses which were destroyed. People in a truck and in army uniform came and picked up the 15 individuals in the families and tortured them quite badly. The traditional leaders didn't run away as we would have done last year. They actually came up and said, this has happened, what do we do? So the issue was taken to our healing organ and to JOMIC. And when we were at a rally in Buhera, the Prime Minister actually went into this issue and wanted to know what had to be done. And the police, we were told last week, in a lot of areas in that region, were now calling communities and just saying to them, if you know that you stole or destroyed somebody's property, just return them. It comes from the traditional method having been used there. And the people who were attacked, not running away as we did in the past, but actually pushing and demanding that. I can give more examples, but I just wanted people to be clear about this one. In urban communities where survivors have reported their cases to magistrate courts, there have been out-of-court settlements and compensatory amounts paid out by perpetrators. However, this is the early, what you say, the early, it's like a swan doesn't make a summer. I don't know the English term. Is it a sparrow? Whatever. Is it, these are just little examples that it is happen, it can happen. These small achievements in no way sum up a national policy on reconciliation, but they are a start, and they do reflect some of the desires of the survivors and how some perpetrators also seek peace of mind. The worst perpetrator in my area was called Big Chitoro. He was in the newspaper three, 4 weeks ago saying he wants truth, justice, and reconciliation process to start now so he can talk about what he did during that time and who sent him. Now, again, him saying that on his own doesn't mean that all the perpetrators want to do that. But he has spoken to the press. The establishment of the organ on national healing, reconciliation, and aggression has been the first step in the setting up of a framework that will in turn lead to policy formulation on the treatment of perpetrators and the treatment of survivors. The organ will be the platform from which the people of Zimbabwe will discuss and agree and disagree and come up with policies for survivors and perpetrators, and from which national healing and integration programs will be planned and implemented. However, the organ is not going to be, this is from my office, the organ is not going to be doing any programs. Our role is going to be one of coordination, guidance, policy, and all that, and all that. We're not going to be actually, we will be coordinating programs. In consultation with civil society and all stakeholders, the organ will devise effective strategies for achieving national healing by addressing past abuses. People ask us, who are you going to be putting as a survivor? What we say is, any Zimbabwean, whatever race, wherever they are, who comes and says, this happened to me and I feel aggrieved, is. That's what we say. So it's an all-inclusive process. We're not going to put any definitions. People will define for themselves. And there are a lot of injured people in Zimbabwe and outside and through all the generations. And this approach is meant to embrace everybody. Right. The organ, in consultation with civil society and all stakeholders, the organ will devise effective strategies for achieving national healing by addressing past abuses and preventing such abuses in the future. Devise methods of making reparations to individuals and communities and families for the harm done by human rights abuses. To develop community-based support programs, devise acceptable methods of rehabilitation, rehabilitating perpetrators by a process of truth-telling within communities, devise effective mechanisms for peace-building and conflict management, develop special training programs for communities in dealing with the psychosocial and physical and other medical needs of survivors, devised training programs aimed at ensuring that security force personnel, traditional leaders, and members of the public service do not abuse their powers, and ensure that political parties and the media refrain from hate speeches and incite violence. The way forward, this is the last page. In order to reach the point, I'm really tired of reading this message. In order to reach the point of designing a comprehensive national program that is outlined above, and that will involve the formulation and implementation of policies that deal with all survivors and all perpetrators in a systematic and consistent manner, the organ is undergoing a preparatory phase. This phrase has come up with a three-page thing. Do you have it here? Mm-hmm. Firstly, this is a process that was arrived at. We've had the most incredible consultation, and we have just an open door policy, and we don't meet anybody individually. The three ministers sit together, and it's been the most incredible training period for me in really understanding what that whole thing is. I'm going to leave this here. On page 35, if you see the MDC, where I came from, policy was only national integration, designed by yours truly, with tears in my eyes, and our program addresses violence from 1980, and our position was, we are doing this because Mugabe declared the policy of reconciliation, everything was forgiven, so we don't have to go behind. But when we were listening to people who were talking to us, and to the different injured from, you can't imagine what we have met. You could really see that the GPA requirement that we talk with experts is really necessary. Because in psychology, people who are victims become perpetrators, vice versa, like that. No one looks at Zimbabwe that way. So we really need those experts to come and say, now, in a societal way, how do you stop this thing like that? I'm just saying to you, very quickly, the MDC policy was not relevant in terms of that, which is why in the GPA, you have got national healing and reconciliation. So when we came on board, we could not leave integration because MDC people have always felt excluded from Zimbabwean society. And Zimbabwean society has never been one society since 1890. Every government which came used different divide and rule methods and kept people apart. So MDC insisted on having national healing, reconciliation, and integration. Right. I think that's clear. What was I saying? This phase includes, firstly, we've put out a six-stage thing after consultations with people. The first period will be extensive consultation with Zimbabwean people at home and abroad. It allows the people of Zimbabwe to participate in traditional and religious cleansing ceremonies, right? What we are going to do in the first part, and this came from the spirit mediums, who are an excluded component of Zimbabwean society. And when we met them, it was to be an hour. After 5 hours, and when we were all groggy, we had an understanding of exactly what they were telling us, which was, if you're going to go into a new thing like healing, which has never been done since 1890, you need to get the country from the leader himself to have a mindset that is collective, where you're going to say to yourselves, we are going to dedicate our minds to national healing. So the first phase will be where RG himself, RG is Robert Mugabe, will announce in a proclamation that the country in 2 weeks' time is going to have a national dedication. I think this will be done as soon as I get back. What will then happen is that in 2 weeks' time, it will be a Friday, the Muslims will have their dedication in their mosques. The Jewish people, the Seventh-day Adventists on the Saturday. On the Sunday, the Christians. But the spirit mediums are choosing a three-day period, a week when the spirit mediums can do the same thing for for all the different spirit mediums in the country. So they've chosen the time for us. After 2 weeks of that 3 days, again, then there'll be a launch of the organ formally, and it will be done at the Sheraton with everybody there. And for the first time, you will get minority groups that have been excluded from Zimbabwean society actually participating in a inclusive forum and saying, this is what we want to do in Zimbabwe. And actually then, after that, we, the three ministers, will travel for 2 months round Zimbabwe. We have 10 provinces. On the first day, we will meet traditional leaders. On the second day, we will meet opinion leaders, that's NGOs. At night, hopefully, those that are really interested in the thing will keep us awake talking about what they want to do. So after 8 weeks, hopefully the diaspora will put a program in place where they can also engage with us in the internet by visits if they feel that they are needed to put their views as well. These ceremonies in that period are about acknowledging the harm that was done, not just in the past 10 years, but to the whole country throughout history. And what's interesting, when we spoke with the traditional healers, you know, they really are experts. Some of the things they told us we thought was fiction. When we checked, we found them facts, such as the things that happened when the whites first came to the country and the injury done at that time, which are causing a lot of fissures even now, whatever we do. And they were not wanting retribution. They really said that if we clear our heads and cleanse ourselves and really put a pledge that we will never do it, the country would be fine. Secondly, we in the GPA, we are told to deal with experts. After traveling for the 8 weeks, we are going to have an experts meeting. Experts meeting. I hope to see Dr. Clark there with a team from Oxford University. The experts are in four categories. The first category are the local experts who have always worked in Zimbabwe. And it will be, again, the second category, their partners abroad. We hope that Zimbabwe is going to open up in such a way that experts will be able to work inside. The third category are experts in the region. The GPA is a creation of our region, really. I don't think many in ZANU-PF wanted to go in it. I don't think many of us in FDC wanted to go in it. But the region made sure that, like cattle, we would actually go and drink in there and clean up our country. And we are. So we want regional experts to actually be involved. The fourth category are institutions and experts who work with Zimbabweans outside who have never been to Zimbabwe. And those with the best practices that would actually be bringing relevant expertise to the country. And like in this category is a place in Sydney where I'm a client. When I was tortured, that's where I was able to go after 2 months in a stretcher. I was there again for another 10 months. Australia has an institution called New South Wales Service for the Treatment and Rehabilitation of Torture and Trauma Survivors. It's a real institution. It has got 38 nationalities. It deals with refugees into Australia. And had I not gone there, I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, I would not be standing here talking to you, because their methodology is very simple. They use your language, your culture, your environment to get the best practices for conflict resolution in your own society. So I didn't then go there and run away and decide to stay in Australia. I was able to come back and take up and move on. Institutions like that, we would like to see how they actually deal with tortured people. The GPA lays down that experts be brought into the process. We said that. And really, let me just conclude by saying the way forward. Conclusion, national healing, reconciliation and integration is not an easy process for Zimbabwe, and it will not happen as quickly as the Zimbabwean people in the country would anticipate, nor at the pace the international community would wish. Nevertheless, for Zimbabwe, It is not an impossible goal, because Zimbabweans, if they put their minds to it, will do it. Through laying down the values and principles that will guide the process, the political parties have shown some commitment towards long-lasting reconciliation, the healing of the country, and integration of Zimbabwean society. Zimbabweans at all levels, at home and in the diaspora, will be compelled by the parameters being put in place by the three ministers to put their opinions to how the mechanisms should be, therefore take up the responsibility of building the process that will eventually establish the healing, reconciliation, and integration of Zimbabwean society. I've not read 2 pages. Thank you.